You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. As holiday shopping kicks into gear, drones may be a hot item on a lot of lists. According to estimates from the Consumer Technology Association, about 400,000 drones will be sold during this holiday season.
That's a whole lot of new vehicles flying around up there, and federal regulators and others are worried that the rules currently in place aren't enough to deal with a big influx of civilian drones. A Federal Aviation Administration Advisory Committee released guideline recommendations yesterday.
Issues that come up include privacy, where and when can drones take pictures and video, then there's airports. There have been at least two cases of drones flying too close to the Dane County Airport. And many other incidents around the country. And if someone flies a drone over your house, is that trespassing? An angry homeowner in Louisville shot down an expensive drone flying over his property this last summer.
Gregory McNeil joins us now. He's Associate Professor of Law and Public Policy at Pepperdine University and a member of the FAA's Task Force on Drone Policy. Greg, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
Before we get into these new regulations, are we seeing a big boom in drone use, especially recreational drone use in this country?
We're seeing a big boom in drone use actually across the board, not just recreational. And in fact, the lines between recreational and consumer are increasingly blurred, where someone who might have one of the best-selling recreational devices and flies it for fun on the weekends may then, during the week, use it to do real estate photography for a friend who's a realtor and might even get compensated for that. So we're seeing a real blending of the lines between the two types of uses of the same device.
Now, what kind of rules are in place now before these new recommendations come into effect for various kinds of civilian drone use?
Sure. So presently, the rules can be summarized for consumer or recreational use as a requirement that the individual, the guidelines suggest, stay below 400 feet. If you're operating by law within 5 miles of an airport, let the airport know that you're operating. Keep the device within visual line of sight and don't fly it over people. So those are the general guidelines for recreational operators. For commercial operators, the guidelines are far more complex. In fact, you have to go through a lengthy process of getting an exemption to be able to fly. It's known as a 333 exemption. That exemption from FAA regulations requires you to have a sport pilot certificate, to file a bunch of notices prior to conducting the operation. It's a costly and time-consuming process, which when the FAA drops their new regulations for it's called Part 107, the commercial operations this summer, it'll instead be a mere written test that a person will have to pass to get themselves an operator certificate. It'll be far less burdensome and they won't need that pilot's license.
Now, the key part of these recommendations that were released yesterday seem to be a registration requirement. So for personal drone owners, what kind of drones would have to be registered? What's involved in that process?
Yeah, so previously, drones, unmanned aircraft, were exempted from the FAA's registration requirement for aircraft. At the end of October, the Secretary of Transportation made a decision that, given the proliferation in the number of uses and the reports, not necessarily the actual incidents, but the reports of incidents, compelled the Department of Transportation and the FAA to say, we need an accountability system to tie these devices to their users. And so a task force was convened. I was a member of the task force. And the ultimate recommendation of the task force was that and this is our recommendation, it's not clear that the FAA will do this, but the recommendation of the task force was that if you have a device that weighs more than 250 grams, which is approximately 9 ounces, you have to go to a website, put in your name and address, click submit. You'll get back a single registration number, and you should place that registration number on all of your drones. And so I have 6 or 7 drones because I'm kind of a geek, and I have 4 or 5 more that are smaller that wouldn't fall into this registration requirement. But once I get that number once, I can write it on all of my drones, and then when I get bored with one and sell it to someone, I merely have to remove that number, and that new person is responsible for registering their device and updating their address.
So what's the idea there? What problems would this registration help us fix?
You know, so the Secretary of Transportation was faced with that question at the press release when he initially announced it. And I think he was pretty honest when he said, listen, the biggest thing that they're trying to do is if an incident happens, they want to be able to tie the device back to a user. And they also want people who have previously thought that this wasn't an aircraft that they were operating, that they didn't have responsibilities, to at least go through a registration process that made them aware that they were operating in an airspace system where there are other low-flying aircraft like helicopters and low-flying general aviation airplanes, and that they might be near airports even though they don't realize it. And then finally, to sort of just get those people into an understanding that they're in a system of accountability. It won't let you know what drone is flying in the air. You won't be able to look up and know who's operating it. There's really no way to do that with the technology as it exists today, but it will be able to tie that device back to someone and try and make that person feel, that operator feel, like they're part of a system of accountability.
Talking to Greg McNeil from Pepperdine University about drones. There are a lot of them out there, more and more civilian drones on the way, expected to be a big item this holiday shopping season. He was part of an effort to come up with rules, including registration for civilian drones. One objection from drone enthusiasts, as I understand it, Greg, is 9 ounces, just over half a pound. That's not a lot of drone. They're saying, hey, that's too small. That's a, you know, that's a little remote control airplane, in effect.
It is. And listen, I share the interest of enthusiasts. In addition to being a professor, I run a startup that provides airspace information to drone operators, most of whom are recreational and hobbyist users. And so those are my people, so to speak. The company's called AirMap, and that's also sort of full disclosure here. Mm-hmm. I sympathize with that concern. However, one of the things that the task force had to address was, what is the threat to a person on the ground if one of these devices were to fail while in air and fall to the ground? And then it became a physics-based calculation. What would be the kinetic energy impact of the person on the ground? And it turns out, based on a bunch of scientific studies that the task force was provided by the FAA, that a device weighing 9 ounces, which basically, if you think about a full can of Diet Coke, if you drop that from 400 feet and it hits someone on the head, there's a high likelihood of a fatality there. I do agree that that is a very small-sized device, but that was the rationale behind the calculation. And I should add one other thing, which is that while the size is one piece of the equation, the task force came to a series of compromises. And so a way to think about this is that if you allow the weight to be really low, you're sweeping a lot of devices into a registration requirement. And so a trade-off would be a single registration, one time and one number across all devices, right? So make it less burdensome on the filling out of the information side of things and providing just one number that can be put on all devices, because so many devices are being swept up into this. And were you to switch that around and maybe make the size of the device larger, I think that it was likely that we might have seen people wanting more onerous registration requirements beyond what was already being collected, including individual numbers for each device, which would require someone to keep returning to this database to update every time they got a new drone or every time they sold one.
Another concern, another criticism that I think is out there, is that these regulations don't go far enough. People are worried about privacy, security, trespassing, things like that. And this helps us solve those problems after they occur. It's very reactive. Something bad happens, you check that registry. Did the committee look at more proactive efforts on those issues?
So we were tasked with 10 questions. And actually, when you look at the public Federal Register notice from the Secretary of Transportation, there were 10 questions, and then each of those questions actually had 3 subordinate questions. So it was about 30 questions to resolve in 3 days. and there were a variety of things that came up, like, should the device be registered at point of sale? So before you could walk out of Best Buy, should it be registered? And sort of we looked at that, and there were a lot of concerns that if someone was giving this as a gift, is grandpa going to register it and then hand it off and then a re-registration? So that came up. There were lots of things that could have been more onerous and more burdensome that could have gone farther. And I think when you looked at the group of people who were assembled, people from the Airline Pilots Association, helicopter pilots, then people from the drone industry, from startups and others, the consensus view was, the goal is to have this line of accountability. That was really the mandate. So make it easy for people to get into the system. Don't make it hard. Don't make it expensive. And make it a simple process that gets as many people participating in a community of responsibility as possible, and then down the road deal with more more burdensome types of things, like how do we handle privacy, which really the federal government has said that's a type of thing that's going to be handled at the local level. How do we handle trespass? Again, that's something that the federal government says will be handled at the local level. And so don't try in 3 days to solve all the problems in the world. Just try and create this accountability system by registering the devices.
We're talking to drone expert Greg McNeil from Pepperdine University. Recommended drone guidelines came out yesterday. He was on that task force. Action is on the way from the federal government, and these drones are expected to be hot sellers this holiday season.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What concerns do you have about drones and the civilian use of drones? What regulations do we need? And do you have a drone? Do you want one? Maybe one on your holiday list. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation about civilian drone use in the United States with Gregory McNeil, Associate Professor of Law and Public Policy at Pepperdine University. A federal committee issued new regulations yesterday, and shoppers are expected to buy hundreds of thousands of drones this holiday season.
You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think there need to be regulations on drones, new ones? What would you like to see in place? What worries do you have about drones? Do you use one for work or for play? And is a drone on your shopping list this holiday weekend? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Greg, getting away from these new federal guidelines a little, you brought up privacy issues a little bit, mentioned that this is something that might ultimately get sorted out at local and state levels. What kind of arguments are people having? What kind of worries are people having when it comes to drones as possible violators of privacy, or their users, I guess?
Right. So this is it's a new technology. It provides certain capabilities that I think people have heretofore been unfamiliar with or simply not paid attention to. And so the first is the vantage point capability, the ability really, most of these have cameras, and the ability to basically put a camera in a location where someone's able to see into areas that people think that they have an expectation of privacy in. And I say that in that way because, for example, if you go into your backyard, you expect that you have privacy in your backyard, especially if it's fenced with trees. But since the late 80s, the Supreme Court has said that we have no reasonable expectation of privacy from aerial surveillance in our backyards. And that's because aircraft can fly over that are able to see into our yards. And so someone in a Cessna or in a helicopter could see into our yards. They certainly could put sophisticated cameras on those. Your neighbor could go up to the second or third floor of their home and look down into your yard. And we sort of have grown accustomed to those types of privacy intrusions, and we have either an acceptance of them or a level of comfort with that. And now a new technology comes along that makes people feel like there's a new vantage point, a new observational capability. A drone's easier to get a hold of than a helicopter. And so I think that makes people reasonably troubled. On the other side of that, though, there are a bunch of existing laws that protect against peeping Toms looking into people's windows, whether they do it with a telephoto lens or whether they do it with a drone. Looking into people's backyards, for example, in California is protected if you're doing it in an offensive way that allows you to see someone's private, intimate, familial activities. And so whether you climb a tree to do that with a camera or whether you use a drone to do it, that's protected by existing law, certainly in California and other jurisdictions. But these are things that raise the natural concerns of people. And at the same time, we're seeing the concerns, but we have yet to see all of the potential benefits that are coming. And this is sort of like when the early adopters first got cell phones with cameras on them. And most of us don't remember that there were all kinds of laws at the state, local, and federal level coming up saying, like, prior to a camera taking a picture, it must make a loud beep. And these were the types of laws that people were trying to pass. And eventually, everyone became accustomed to the fact that cell phones would have cameras on them, and the regulatory ideas and requirements dropped off because people started to see the utility of the devices. I think that's going to happen in the next year or two with drones.
Let's go to our callers now. We've got John on the line in Fond du Lac. John, hi.
Hi, how you doing? Really, really great program you guys have. I work in freelance video, and I know all of my clients have been wanting drone footage, and same with a lot of the other guys that I work with. And it's kind of the Wild West out there right now. So to hear that, you know, there's actually a registration process and the written test, and that there's going to be something besides the 333, which, as your guest said, is an absolute nightmare. I've tried that. It's not a pleasant experience. But to hear that, you know, finally something that is going to be enacted with drone flyers in mind, I think is really, really exciting.
John, thanks a lot for that call. Greg, it sounds like he's talking about those commercial regulations you talked about earlier coming into effect, I think you said, next summer?
Yeah, so it's looking like June or July, although Congress mandated that the FAA have those rules published by September 30th of 2015. So it's a deadline that has been slipping, although I'm pretty confident that the FAA wants to get the rule in place because the exemption process is actually very burdensome for them. So the caller, John, mentioned what a nightmare the process is. To give you an idea, the process is expensive for the end user submitting it, but it's also expensive for the government, because the government has to review each of these basically 10 to 30 page requests for exemption, and each person in the appropriate agency within the FAA has to sign off on each individual application. And to give you an idea, so far we've seen a little over 2,000 applications that have been approved by the FAA, which is more exemptions than the FAA has ever processed within the last 20 years for aircraft exemptions. And in addition to that, they're now receiving approximately 1,200 exemption requests per week. And so it's crushing their exemption system, which was never designed to handle that type of workload. And so they have a real incentive to get a rule set in place that is a formalized rule set as opposed to governing by exemption. And so I think we'll see those rules come about in June and July.
John, thanks for that call. We're talking to Greg McNeil about drones and laws that apply to them. We'll go next to Scott in Trempealeau County. Scott, hi.
Hi, yes. I had a quick inquiry or a comment on this. My biggest concern is, I know terrorism is a really big thing lately, and these drones I know are capable of carrying devices or some weight to them depending on the size of the drone. Now, how are we going to regulate or prevent any kind of terrorist attack on individuals, or can these things be shot down or stopped? How do you stop it if, you know, you're in a big crowded area? What's regulating people from running these drones over the top of crowded areas?
Scott, thanks a lot for that call. Yeah, it doesn't take a lot of imagination to think of how a terrorist organization might use drones, Greg. Are policymakers thinking about that and what to do about it?
I actually testified before the House Homeland Security Committee on this exact topic. And so some of the things that we discussed were, you know, of course, what drones allow someone to do is to get around perimeter defenses, but the requirement is still that the individual have some sort of weapon on the device. And so if someone has access to explosives, is placing an explosive on a drone the best way to get the explosives into an area? Or the other example that came up in the hearing was anthrax. And so my response to the question of anthrax was, why would you use a drone to disperse anthrax when you could go to Starbucks and sprinkle it into the sugar, right? They're just better methods of dispersing weapons. That's not to say that the device doesn't provide some observational capabilities to someone who has ill will, or that the device doesn't provide some psychological impact, right? So a pretend bomb as opposed to an actual bomb might cause chaos in crowded areas. And so there are a bunch of solutions that are coming into place. For example, DJI, the world's leading manufacturer, now has restrictions that don't allow their devices to fly over stadiums. 3D Robotics, their device issues a warning. The stadiums themselves are implementing countermeasures against these types of devices in the same way that they implement countermeasures on the ground. And so there are solutions out there to push back against these types of threats, and we just have to figure out the right cost-benefit analysis of how much of a threat the device is. I think any new technology will allow someone with ill will to be able to use it in a way that might be harmful, and then we just have to figure out how to balance these. We should bear in mind that for decades, people of model aircraft enthusiasts have been able to build jet-powered model aircraft that can fly over 300 miles an hour and are filled with fuel. fuel. And as early as the late 90s, there were reports by RAND and others about how someone could use one of those remote control aircraft as basically a guided missile. And that is far more harmful than the type of device you're going to pick up on Amazon or Best Buy. And we have yet to see an attack using a remote control airplane that is powered by fuel.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Greg, do you expect to see a lot of local and state ordinances come up related to drones?
I do expect to see a lot of local and state ordinances, and I think many of them will overreach. The authority of the state and local governments really begins from the ground up to a very low altitude, probably around 100 or 200 feet. And state and local governments have authority over privacy, nuisance, and trespass. If they stay within those guideposts, I think they'll be successful in implementing some laws. But if they stray from those guideposts trying to regulate the airspace, I think they're going to be intersecting with areas of federal control.
Greg, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Gregory McNeil, Associate Professor of Law at Pepperdine University, talking about drone policy with new efforts coming from the federal government.